Well, thank you very much, Ingrid. I am very honored as well as delighted to be speaking about the enduring tension and the work, the life, the thought of Donald Devine, who I had the privilege of calling a colleague over the past 4 years at the Fund for American Studies, and who has been a friend for much longer than that. And today, as we look at whether the conversation can hold between libertarians and traditionalists, between fusionists and perhaps what is now called the New Right or national conservatism, Donald Devine's work stands out not only for what is on the printed page, but also for the example he has provided of a leader in an ongoing conversation in a very practical way. Don regularly convenes in Washington, D.C., a group of libertarians and traditionalists and others of the right to come together more or less on a monthly basis to discuss fusionism, to discuss differences, similarities, not with an aim of creating a political coalition, but rather in the name of philosophical inquiry and trying to discover the shared roots in Western civilization of both those who emphasize liberty and those who emphasize tradition. Well, a week from tomorrow is going to be the second National Conservatism Conference. This time it will take place in Florida. The first was held a few years ago in the pre-COVID era, put together by Yoram Hazony, author of The Virtue of Nationalism. National conservatism and nationalism have been very much burgeoning movement on the American right, intellectually speaking, since Donald Trump became president in 2017. And now that he's left office, he is still, and national conservatism remains, a kind of revolutionary force in the thought of the right. And it's a force which has brought into question many of the old verities of fusionism, of the coalition and the philosophy that had been informing Ronald Reagan's presidency and that brought him to the White House in the first place. And so Donald Devine's book, The Enduring Tension, is extremely timely. It comes to us when the debate on the right is perhaps more acrimonious, but also more engaging and interesting than it has been in many a year. As we ask whether fusionists and national conservatives can continue the conversation that has long been going on between libertarians and traditionalists, there are perhaps three hurdles that they face from the outset. The first is simply that many people on one side do not know anyone on the other. And this has always been true with respect to traditionalists and libertarians in the past. It's true today with many national conservatives and more libertarian-minded fusionist conservatives as well. So you often see denunciations coming from perhaps someone with libertarian leanings or someone with traditionalist or new right leanings of the other side without really having a deeply informed awareness of where the other party is coming from. This is simply a matter of social circles that do not always intersect. And one of the great services that Donald Devine has provided at the Fund for American Studies is to bring together these circles which otherwise have often not met. A second difficulty that the conversation between traditionalists and libertarians encounters today is that neither side can concede or recognize the problems that the other has identified. So, for example, there are many libertarians and some fusionists who would like to deny the challenges that the very abused form of free markets that we exist in today pose for traditional morality. There are many fusionist conservatives and certainly many libertarians who simply say, well, whatever big business does, whatever the Chamber of Commerce does, we can criticize it from the sidelines, but we can't actually engage the use of political power against the tech companies or against any number of other forces in corporate America that may be pursuing a very aggressive, active agenda against conservative values. Now, in saying that libertarians and fusionists have difficulty recognizing the problem here, I'm not calling on libertarians and fusionists to adopt the kind of use of state power that one finds people on the new right and many traditionalists endorsing today. I'm simply saying that they, libertarians and fusionists, should recognize why the new right and why traditionalists have started to open the question of whether state power should be employed to address the use of private power against conservative cultural concerns. Similarly, on the flip side, one finds a great many moral critiques of capitalism coming from the new right and coming from traditionalists. These critiques, however, tend to take for granted the existence of some alternative system that would provide economically for the well-being of billions of people upon the planet Earth. And this is not something that can be taken for granted. Before the rise of modern capitalism, you simply did not have the capacity to sustain the population levels that we see in our world today. And the decline in fertility is something that concerns traditionalists and new right thinkers a great deal. There is a certain paradox here. It may be the case that capitalism in the 21st century has started to take a turn that is anti-fertility, but fertility on the level that we have known over the past 200 or 400 years was only made possible and only made sustainable by the economic fruits of capitalism and of free enterprise. So again, this is not saying that traditionalists and the new right must adopt the same point of view that libertarians and fusionists have about the overwhelming merits of the free market, but it is to say that if you want to reject capitalism root and branch, you have to be prepared for the social and demographic costs that may come with that. And if you want to have an alternative economic system, you have a tremendous amount of work cut out for you, not simply reading Chesterton and Belloc, not simply having a few ideas derived from the texts of distributism, but in actually thinking of, in practical terms, how you are going to feed the planet, how you are going to sustain billions of people upon the world, as opposed to the much lower levels of population that had existed for the entire previous tens of thousands or indeed hundreds of thousands of years of the human race's existence on this world. Finally, another difficulty that traditionalists and libertarians encounter, that the new right and fusionists encounter when they try to have discussions, is the tendency for the conversation to become so abstract that it becomes impossible to compare points of view. And, Hayek, for example, and this is something one finds in Don Devine's own work, or St. Thomas Aquinas, they both provide very powerful outlooks that have, quite comprehensive views of human nature and the human good. And yet, precisely for that reason, as you get into more abstract formulations of human nature and the order, the political order and the economic order that should be appropriate to human nature, it becomes very easy to stay within a system, and it becomes difficult to communicate to people who are outside of it where you are coming from and your ability to understand their rival point of view. So in some ways, you need to become more naive in order to keep the conversation going. And it doesn't mean, again, that you should abandon your own philosophy, that you should abandon your Hayekianism or abandon your Thomist points of view. Quite the contrary. You should remain true to your convictions while at the same time being capable of, for the sake of argument and during a conversation, entering into the principles that may be represented by your counterparty. And again, that is not for the sake of creating an artificial, politically utilitarian consensus. It's rather for the sake of the deeper philosophical pursuit of trying to bring people who have rather different premises together in an understanding of the truth. Now, having given those points of difficulty for the conversation, let me say a few words about the enduring tension itself, as Donald Devine's work has illuminated it. Don ends the enduring tension, he ends his book, with, first of all, a hopeful note in the very last chapter, pointing to the durability of religion, that predictions in the early 20th century that religion was on its last legs and that secularism would inherit the world have proven to be entirely false. That in fact religion is in many ways stronger than ever. And even Christianity, which seems to be very much jeopardized in Europe, Western Europe in particular, and to some degree here in the United States as well, Christianity is very strong in Africa, and it is growing by leaps and bounds in communist China. Don points to this as a sign of tremendous hope. When it comes to a diagnosis and a prescription for solving some of the difficulties that we confront today, Don is very optimistic about the power of decentralization. And he sees many of the difficulties we confront springing from the centralization of political power, particularly in Washington, D.C. So Don is very optimistic both that there are cultural markers and that there are policies which can be adopted which will result in a change for the better for the sake of conservative flourishing. And he is confident in decentralization, confident in the power of localism as opposed to the power of a highly rationalistic, bureaucratized central sort of authority and power. Well, I share some of Don's optimism, and I share his description, his diagnosis of the problem of consolidated political power. And yet I do have several points of disagreement, and I'll just cover them very quickly. First of all, as Don himself very eloquently shows, what Christianity has been able to accomplish in the West, in Western Europe and in North America, is a unique phenomenon. And unfortunately, it does not seem to me as if Christianity in communist China will be able to perform the same sorts of political miracles that was performed in the West by Christianity in our own sort of political order. Because you can look at various forms of Eastern Christianity, whether it's the Copts in Egypt, whether it's the Orthodox Church. They did not give rise to the same kind of culture of liberty that we are familiar with in the West. And this is not a criticism of the spiritual merits of either Coptic Christianity or of Eastern Orthodox Christianity. It's simply to point out a historical reality, that the combination of elements in the West that brought about the freedom that we enjoy is distinctive to the West. And it seems to me that as Western Christianity and a distinctly Western culture becomes jeopardized over the course of the next century, that the sort of liberty we are accustomed to enjoying will become a very rare thing. And again, while the growth of Christianity in communist China is a thing to be celebrated, it is not something which will necessarily deliver political liberty as we have known it. I should also mention, Don is very optimistic in some ways that the centralization of power and the growth of bureaucracies, particularly the amount of the federal deficit, the unfunded liabilities of the federal government, that all of this is unsustainable and therefore it must collapse. And once it does collapse, you will get a flourishing of a more decentralized kind of civilization, perhaps something even on the order of the Holy Roman Empire, and that will be a deliverance from the difficulties that we currently face. And unfortunately, there I must be rather pessimistic, because it does seem to me that, in fact, centralized, despotic, and stagnant civilizations have been able to hold on for many centuries. And while Don cites the opinion of Niall Ferguson, a professor at Harvard University, to support the claim that the Roman Empire in the West actually collapsed rather quickly in the course of the 5th century for between about 405 and 475, I do not share, and I think most classicists would not share, that judgment. That in fact the Roman Empire was stagnant and jeopardized, especially in the West, for more like 200 years. We can also point to the Byzantine Empire. We can point to any number of other political orders, such as Mandarin China, and see that stagnation and stasis can endure for a very long time. And in fact, it is liberty that seems much more rare and much more unusual in the course of human civilization development. And Don himself, in The Enduring Tension, does point this out. But again, I think that he may be over-optimistic in thinking that after the collapse of a economically unsustainable system in America, that you're going to have a flourishing of freedom, when in fact you could have a new form of tyranny and of despotism. And finally, simply to conclude with a few specific points, there is a certain danger in emphasizing localism and decentralization too much. And this is something I think conservatives are unaccustomed to thinking about. Over the past 30 and more years, conservatives have put almost all of their eggs in the basket of decentralization, fighting the federal government in Washington, D.C., relying more on local authority and local power. And yet we see certain realities that confront us that are not going to be resolved simply by decentralizing power. First of all, there is the fact that even the reddest of states tends to be very dependent upon blue cities within it. And here in Texas, we know that many of the tech companies that are leaving California are going where? They're going to Austin, where they will be surrounded by the same kind of culture they are surrounded by in San Francisco. The power of blue cities, which is a kind of local power in one sense, is going to continue to wear away at the red, the conservative, the socially conservative in particular, character of a great many states. We have to be, therefore, willing to look at how we can empower localities that are not as urbanized, And that may require using a degree of federal power to strengthen those localities, or at least to defend the role of rural America within our larger federal system. If you remove that larger federal system, what you do is you actually increase the power of urban America, the power of the cities, and that is ultimately going to be very detrimental to conservatives, at least until we get to a point where we have an urban conservatism that can be far more successful than what we've seen recently. Again, localism and states' rights, these are very good things, and I don't wish to dismiss them, but if we come to the question of whether we would rather be ruled by the federal government or by a one-party state government, such as we see in the state of California, for example, I think many of us would prefer to have the national government for all of its ills than to have the kind of domination by one point of view that you get in so many of our states. There is a great truth in James Madison's idea that you need to have these conflictual elements in a large republic, a national scale republic, if you're going to preserve liberty. And this, again, is something that Don Devine himself notes at various points in The Enduring Tension. However, he tends to emphasize very strongly localism over the need for a mixture of local and national power. Similarly, when it comes to centralization, there is grave danger not only in the centralization of power in Washington, D.C., in the federal government, but also the centralization of power outside of government. As we saw or heard from the last panel, there's a tremendous amount of centralization of power in the media. And this has grave consequences for our freedom of speech. It has grave consequences for our elections and for our freedoms all across the line. We have to be willing to recognize where power actually lies in our country, in the private sector as well as in government itself, if we are going to have the kind of checks and balances, the kind of pluralism that Donald Devine wants to celebrate. It's not simply a matter of formally understanding a separation of power or a checks and balances at the federal level. There also is an informal component. There's a component of checking private power when it becomes excessive. And there again, it's not necessarily the case that libertarians and fusionists are going to come to the same conclusions as the new right or nationalists or traditionalists regarding the role of the federal government and perhaps checking the power of the tech companies or of high finance. However, I think even libertarians and libertarian-leaning fusionists need to at least recognize the problem that consolidated power within the media currently represents, consolidated power within the tech companies and within the financial sphere. Consolidated power really within a certain class in America. And it may be geographically somewhat dispersed. You know, it has its tentacles in Washington, D.C., but also in San Francisco, in Hollywood, in Austin, Texas, in cities across the country. But this educated elite, which has a very anti-conservative program and which is happy to embrace capitalism up to a certain point, but only in the same way that the Chinese Communist Party embraces capitalism in order to serve its own ends as a sort of totalistic ideology. In the same way, you have a problem here in America where the federal government is not the source of all of our evils, and unless we're willing to recognize the concentrations of power outside of it and counteract them as well, we conservatives are going to be overwhelmed. And for a very long time, we have tended to retreat into our own states, retreat into our own communities, and while we find safety there and we find a normality that is otherwise absent from the great national sphere of politics and from the national media scene, we are kidding ourselves if we are not aware of the fact that ultimately what happens in Hollywood, what happens on Wall Street, and not just what happens in Washington, D.C., is going to invade Main Street USA as well. So I wholly endorse Donald Devine's project of bringing together these different sides of the defenders of Western civilization, those who emphasize liberty and those who emphasize tradition. I wholly endorse Don Devine's skepticism of centralized federal power. But I also think that one has to be skeptical and very cautious about the concentrations of power that are outside of government and that may need to be counteracted by a more sophisticated strategy than one that simply endorses decentralization of politics and the strength of locality as a panacea for what is currently ailing the country. Thank you.